So we've got our seeking implemented. That's pretty cool. I need to be in this window. The whole point of this screen, though, is to define boundaries. To say we want to define, you know, the section from 28.2 to 31.4 seconds as a named segment that we can then go and use in our mixups. So what this change does is it just creates a form with a start text field and an end text field. It's really not very exciting. It's pure HTML. I don't know why I left it in. I'll just apply it and we'll move on. So it just gives you start and end fields, and if you're asking to create a new segment rather than editing an existing segment, it also gives you a name field to give it a name. So that's not very exciting at all. And to prove how unexciting it is, I've put some boxes over the front. Right, behind the scenes in the web application, we've got a table called segments. That table has a name, a source, which is a foreign key into the sources table that we defined earlier. It's got a start time and an end time, and that's it. Right, segments are really simple. This blue box is just how this form gets populated behind the scenes. So we say if there's no segment, if we haven't got a segment name yet, then we simply say, yes, we want a new file. We say in the C namespace that this is new. We empty out the start and the end values and we empty out the name. On the other hand, if we do have a segment, we can say C dot new is false. We use this little session.query on the segment name. Sorry, session.query for segments filtering on the segment name and give me the first result to pull out the actual data representation of our segment. I don't want to go into too much detail, but there's all sorts of really cool stuff that the data, I think it's called Clear Silver or something. But the database sort of interfacing layer in Python gives you these objects which just look like objects, and you can poke values into those objects and change things, and behind the scenes that just gets pushed into the database. And if you've got a foreign key into another table, so that you've actually got conceptually a list of one thing associated with one of another, then you have list semantics, so you can append to a list which sits in one of their data objects, then you can go the other way back to the parent as well, and it's all just really, you know, object-y and enterprise-y and stuff. Right, so we just pull the segment out using that really nice layer, and we go set.start equals segment start, set.end is segment end, set.name equals segment name, and then we just populate the form from that using the names that we've defined. So that's pretty simple. Now that we've got the boxes for those bounds, what we want to do is actually record record boundaries that the user specifies, and to do that, we're going to capture the space key. Whenever the user presses the space key, we're going to either start the boundary or stop the boundary, depending upon what mode we're in. So this change involves me ending up in the wrong spot. Right, this change involves the def name equals body args is because I want to render everything based off a common template. That template gives us the Web 2.0 look, but that template also includes the body tag. So I had to say that template inside the body tag calls a function called body args, which normally does nothing, but then when we actually want to put more information into the body tag, we override that body args function inside our local version, our template. and all I've done here is said that we're going to have on keypress equals JavaScript keypressed. And that's to pick up the key events. That's a bit convoluted. Is it all right? Everyone's okay with that? It's just JavaScript, then HTML stuff. Then in our script, we've got our keypressed function, and we've got our form through document, the DOM, through document.form0. And we just say if e.charcode equals 32, which is space, get the play position from the plugin. And depending upon whether we're in progress or not, if we're not in progress, we set the start value to the current position, and we set the end value to nothing. And if we are already in progress, we just set the end value to the position, and then we switch whether we're in progress or not. Does that make sense? Let's see it in action. So now, you know, we can seek in somewhere. And so that's pretty interesting. I'll just start recording. And that's enough. I'll stop recording. Then we give it a name. And we save. And you've defined a segment. So, I mean, that's really easy. That hooks up the behavior we want. But I think we can do it a little bit better. I think we can actually display that segment as we define it in our progress bar, because that'll look cool. So how are we going to do that? We have a new div called segment, which sits inside that progress bar div that we defined earlier. It's only 5 pixels high, so we can see it above, we can see the actual progress sitting underneath the div still. And we have two functions, set segment start and set segment end. These replace what we did earlier. Earlier, we were just straight out saying forms.element start.value equals time and forms.element end.value equals time. But now these functions are going to replace those raw calls. And instead, we both set the value in the form, and we set the S bar, the segment bars, left and width styles appropriately. So when we set the segment start, we set the left style to be an appropriate position, and when we set segment end, we have to calculate the width of the segment and set that appropriately. So actually, when you can see when we're setting the width here, we have to pull the start value back out, parse that into a float, subtract the time, and that gives us the delta. It's pretty simple, I think. I mean, this is all just mucking around in JavaScript, right? then we need to do another couple of little bits and pieces. Set scroll is our function that updates the progress bar as the movie plays, right? And we want to make sure that if we're actually recording a segment at the same time, that we want to update the segment's progress at the same time. So that's all we're doing here. If we're in progress at the segment end, our update progress function is the clicking function. That's when the user clicks somewhere on the progress bar. We jump to that point in the movie. And what we're doing here is we're saying, well, if the user's started to record, so we're in progress, and then they click earlier than where we were recording, we're going to interpret that as meaning they want to start earlier. So we just update the segment, the start position. Does that make sense? If they click later, what will happen is that will load up the movie at that time. The timer tick that calls set scroll will get the play position from the video. The play position will update the segment view, and because we're in progress, it'll also set the segment end. So the end's okay, we're covered for the end. It's just if we click earlier than the start, we want to update the start, pull it back to the position. I'll show you this in a second. Finally, if we're editing a known segment rather than starting a new one, we want to set up the segment start and end at the beginning on the way in, and then We're just updating now the keypressed function to use the set segment start and end functions rather than setting the value in the forms directly as we did before. I know that was a big change. When you apply it all, you get something like this. So we'll go in on that segment we defined before. And you can see now there's this little blue dash, which is the segment that we defined. And if I try and redefine it, I go in here, start recording. You can see as time goes on, we update our progress accordingly. Stop. Right. If I start recording and then jump, I can quickly define a big segment. But if I jump back to before where I started, well, that just updates a new start, like so. So I mean, that's just the behavior that we implemented then in JavaScript. And really, the main important part is that you can simply use getPlayPosition to implement all this, right? So you've got a combination of seeking through the server URL, getPlayPosition, which works regardless of whether you've remotely seeked or not. It's still going to be a consistent number, and the timer tick to make sure you update everything appropriately. And it just works. What is going on? The final thing that I wanted to implement on our segment view is little buttons that you can just use to nudge the start and end backwards and forwards by one frame or five. Or I think I chose one frame and 10 frames. So you know you've got your little segment. It's just about right, but you just want to adjust the start by a single frame or a couple of frames. So that's what these nudge buttons are going to do for us. And I mean the main way that the main importance of them are the important part is this nudge start and an accompanying nudge end function. Nudge start does nothing if we don't have a start value. If we do have a start value, it uses the stored frame rate from the source, so c.source.frameRate, to determine how many milliseconds we should nudge the start by to get exactly one frame, or exactly the number of frames that we've asked to nudge. So amount is the number of frames we want to nudge. Does that make sense? So we take the amount, we divide it by the frame rate, and that gives us the number of milliseconds we need to move, and then we add we construct the new start position, check that it's not now larger than the end position, update the segment start and the segment end, and then set the current movie's source to the new position that we've jumped to. So as you're changing the start around, you actually see the movie start from that point, and you can see, yep, I've got it. That's the position I want it to start from. Similarly for set segment end, we just return if there's no end value. Otherwise, we calculate the amount, get the start pause and the end pause, ignore the change if we've pushed the start pause beyond the end pause. We don't need to set the segment start because the segment start doesn't change, but the segment end is based on where the start is. So when we were actually setting the segment start, we had to update it like here. We had to update the end as well as the start because of we're just using width to say how big the segment is in the display. But here we don't need to update the segment start because it's fixed and it's the end that moves. Then what we do is we say, I'm going to construct a new start pause, which is 3 seconds before the new end pause, or the actual start of the segment, if the segment's shorter than 3 seconds. And then I'm going to construct this funny URL, which has got a question mark t equals, and this is start time, and this is end time, and this says, I just want to display this bounded segment. So I'm going to preview the end. I want the movie to stop where it thinks the end is, and I'm going to start from 3 seconds before that. if I've got enough segment. Does that make sense? And then because I'm an engineer, I did this probably entirely the wrong way and implemented buttons as divs. I'm sorry, Michael. So now we've got our little nudge things. If we nudge the start, we get to see what we've created. So we're actually doing frame by frame movement, as you can see. We can nudge the start forward as well. And we've got bigger changes as well, so we can push the end forward and we get our 3-second-ish preview that tells us where it's going to finish. Like so. Again, it's a little bit of mucking around, it's a little bit messy, but it's actually reasonably easy to get some quite complex framing going on in the browser. Now, I'm sure there's nicer ways of presenting it and prettier ways of doing this, but the mechanics are there, right? And the mechanics are explainable in sort of 10 minutes. That leaves us with our mix-ups. Now, you saw the form before for the mix-ups. You had let's go and have a look. You've got all the film name, the segment names that we've created on the left. And we can just go through and we can add, like so. Right, and that defines an ordering. And then we can say play mix-up to actually see that ordering. It's all very simple. What we're going to do now is look at the mechanism, the code required to set up a playlist. This effectively becomes a playlist. Each of these segments is just a bounded URL that we saw before, right? To play them one after the other, we just have to set up a playlist, and that we can do programmatically through JavaScript, poking at the plugin. The plugin maintains an internal playlist, and we just set it up appropriately. So. Right, first of all, we pull the playlist from the from pylons, if it exists already, by going playlist equals c.playlist. Down here you can see if we're editing a new mixup, we just set c.playlist to be a string that represents an empty list. And otherwise, we pull the mixup out of our database. We get the playlist out of the mix-up and we stringify it, okay? That string then gets pushed into the HTML page where it gets interpreted as JavaScript, so it's kind of dynamic code. And then we just need to make sure when we add our each segment that the user chooses to the form list, that at the same time we push it into our playlist, right? So we're maintaining a playlist which is just the URLs that we need to be able to play. Oh, what's going wrong with that? And then to preview those mix-ups. We have a replace function, and this takes a list of movies, in our case segments, but it's just a list of URLs. And it replaces the internal playlist of the plugin with those URLs. Now this is a little bit messy, and I want to change the API a little bit for the next version of the plugin, because at the moment the API doesn't let you have an empty playlist. It doesn't let you have zero movies playing, and I think it would be better if we could have zero movies playing. So, I mean, all that happens is you start from one and you go to one less than the length of the playlist, and we use plugin.getPlaylistLength to extract the length, and you remove the movie at the start, and at the end of that, you should still have one movie left, which was a movie at the very end. And then we set that movie to the first movie that we want in the playlist, and then we walk through and append the rest of the movies. Okay, it's a little bit messy. We should just be able to, call something like plugin.removeAllMovies, and then for I equals zero, I is less than new movies.length i++, plugin.appendMovie, and that should just work. But as it is, we have to do this a little bit dodgily. And then we have a play function, which just plays one segment, so you can look at individual segments, and that just replaces the segment list with a single item, which is the segment we want to play. And to play a whole playlist, a whole mix-up, we just pass in the playlist, which has been defined in the browser. I don't think I went through the adding the libog play embed thing and putting the appropriate links in, but I figure we've probably had enough of that. So we can play. Oops. We can play these sections. Anything licensed under Creative. Or we can define our playlist like so. And we can play our whole mix-up. And when you do this, you'll see we get to the end of each segment, and then we just jump to the next. That's it. And we have video remixing on the web. Stop that. Yeah, really simple. Now, there's a lot more things that I'd like to be able to do, which some are reasonably easy to get working, some are going to be a lot harder. I'd like to do things like have crossfades and other transition effects between playlist segments. I want to be able to rip just a video track out of a video and mix it with an audio track from over here. These things you can't do at the moment. We are looking at implementing these things in Analytics 2. In fact, we had a really great discussion just yesterday about how best to do this. So, you know, these things are on the table for future. Yep. Right, so you, the question was, would that be on the server, first of all, and could you do it just by having predefined fade clips that you pull in to use? So the answer to the first question, would it be on the server, is yes, track extraction would be. Pulling the video content out of a movie would be. No, crossfading would not be done on the server. That actually has to be done in the client. And the second part, the having predefined clips, you can't actually do that, because when you crossfade, you want to use the actual frames where you're at. So you need to do that part in the plugin. Sorry? Once it becomes windowless, yeah, you could actually do that. The suggestion was you could use the opacity settings in the DOM to control the fade, to fade one instance of the plugin with the old movie out and the new instance with the new movie in. You could do that. I actually want to put it inside the plugin though, because we can offer more than just crossfades. We can do all sorts of funky, star wipes and then we can make Star Wars. So that was once it's in Firefox 3, SVG allows us to do all of this kind of stuff because the two should just work together. There's even been some demos of that. Chris Double is doing some amazing things with SVG and video content. I highly encourage you all to go and check it out. How would people find those demos? Yeah, Google Chris Double and find his web page and check out the demos, and they're really awesome. I mean, it seems like And he's bald, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. Okay. But it seems like here's a rectangle with a video playing in it. Watch as I rotate it around the screen. This is programmatically in JavaScript using SVG, and now I'll flip it over and it's playing backwards or in reverse, and now I'll flip it back and I'll scale it and there's some amazing stuff that he's doing. It's really cool. Right, so there's just one more. Let's see, this goes to 12:20, right? Okay. There's one more thing that I want to do. I also implemented just a really simple mix-up player because I thought the web interface for defining mix-ups was really ugly. It'd be nice just to be able to go to a page which has just your video and plays your mix-up without any of the save edit forms. I better save this one so we actually have something to view. It's literally this much code. This is the entire file. You've got your embed at the top. You've got your script, which sets up the pulls out the plugin from the DOM. Gets the playlist from Pylons, the same as it did before. Sets the current movie to the first element in the playlist. Goes through, adds the rest of the movies to the playlist. And it just starts playing immediately. So let's see that in action. There we go. So, it's unadorned, it's just the window and the pleasure playlist for you. Your mix up for you. Right. I need better test content. Right, so there's a whole other side to Anodex too, which is this annotation idea of putting timeline text into the video. We really haven't talked about any of that as regards to this web application. There are some possible uses. For example, you could use an Anodex file with a whole bunch of CMML annotations defined within the file as a way of importing segment information. So the annotations correspond to the segments which get defined, and vice versa, you could use it to export. So you've got a way of saying, I just want to save all of my segments in an offline format. I don't want to have to keep the database. I just export them, push them out into an Anodex file, and the CMML is set up to record where all those segment boundaries are. you could use them for creation of novel subtitle tracks. So you're watching your mixed up video and text pops up below that says, stuff that people have decided should be part of their particular mix up view. And there's other things you could do with it too. But if we have time, and I think we do, would people be interested in some really simple demonstrations of stuff you can do with the annotations? Yep, great, okay. Actually, I'll show you this as well. And I'll start with. Right, now, this doesn't use any pylons. This does not use any special backend server-side stuff at all, except for mod Anodex. So we have a completely vanilla Apache installation. We have just mod Anodex poked into that Apache installation. And then we have just some plain old HTML files, which completely client-side do things like extract all the annotations from video and display them as a table of contents.
Today the topic is,
and then you can just use those contents to jump to the point in the video that you're interested in. Like so.
First of all, we'll have Arjan Hill from MySQL.
Yeah.
MySQL is a very successful open source database that no doubt you've all heard about, so we'll get to hear about their business model. Then we'll be speaking to Ray Lazaga from CompuCure. CompuCure specializes in e-business transactions.
This is the important
online,
stuff.
I guess business. and we'll get to hear about how they're using open source for their...
What you do is you...
Then we'll hear from Ray Warro, who's from...
When you load the page, you run this load table of contents function, which uses an AJAX request. AJAX is a bit of a misnomer here. Really, all we're doing is we're just pulling a file from the server in the background. Right? What that file is, when you look, it's the video again, right? The same video as we're displaying. But we've set the headers explicitly to accept only text XML. And when we do that, when we re-request the video only asking for CMML, we get all of the CMML annotations of the video. The server, the mod analytics, does that for us. Once we've received it, we call the create top function, which is this little baby down here. Now, the vast majority of this is poking things into the DOM. So all of this create element, create text node, create element, append char, blah, 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 that's all DOM manipulation. Right, effectively we use, I'm using something called E4X, which is, I think it's ECMAScript for XML or something like that. It's this really, really awesome way of dealing with XML inside JavaScript. And you can just say, well, you know, X is my new XML object built around the text which I retrieved from the server. And then for each clip in x.clip, and if you look at the CMML, there's inside the CMML main tag, there's a set of clip tags. Right? So for each clip gives me an XML object for each of those. And then I can pull out the description using clip.desk. Desk is another tag inside the clip. I can pull out the ID, which is an attribute of the clip itself, and the start, which is an attribute of the clip itself. And that's all really easy. Pulling stuff out of the XML is simple. Unfortunately, you can't use E4X to push stuff into the DOM. And as a result, I have to fall back on all of their DOM 1.0 and DOM 2.0, I think it's 1.0 functionality. And that's really painful. But I mean, you know, we create a div, we create a text node with the name and the colon, we create a bold element and push the text node into the bold, we create a link and blah, 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 you know, push that into the link and then create another text node around the rest of the description and put the whole lot in a div, put the div on the page. And then this, seek time, just pulls you to the time which is defined in the CMML as the place you want to go to. All right, so that's pretty simple. Oh, something else to notice. This is completely client-side, but we're using question mark and a movie name. So if you changed that name, let me just see what's in examples. Right. If you change this name to something different, you get a different video. Now, it turns out there's no CMML annotations
I'm
in this anyway.
I'm Sylvia Farquhar, and my background is a researcher. There we go.
This is all on the client. We're not doing anything to the server here, except
this
having this little mod annotation.
So it's probably not going to get much more geeky than this with you today. But bear with me, I'm trying to explain new technology that goes beyond what we currently can do. I'm trying to explain it in a simple manner. Please feel free to ask questions.
The question is, what is the Anodex file? Anodex is actually now...
There's a lot behind this. And
so the Anodex file format, every Anodex file is a completely valid
it's
old file.
The continuous media
okay, it has a skeleton track, which is something which is going into old real soon. It has your video and your audio track, and it has your CMML track, and it's all in the one file.
We're going to see that digital media will be
what creates Anodex files? Our Anodex tools.
We're going to see this
we've got ANX-ENC, which takes a CMML file and an OGG file and spits out an Anodex file. We've also got ANX-RIP, which goes the other way. And some OGG tools as well, OGG, RIP, OGG, Merge, a bunch of different. We've got lots of utilities for doing this sort of stuff.
Technically based on the internet protocol. So it's what we get through our cables currently, also through the mobile phones now with 3G phones that can deliver internet connectivity, and in future IPTV will also be connected. Everything will be distributed via IP, the internet protocol. This is all stuff that Mick has previously explained as well.
Just for the camera
now,
and the microphone, Conrad pointed out that in fact you can use raw old files with mods annotates, and it will create annotates files with empty CMML content on the fly for you. And you can, and then Sylvia pointed out that you can even put an old file and a CMML file on the server, and again mod annotates will multiplex those on the fly as it serves them. There's plenty of flexibility. Right, so that's that. Rather than extracting the table of contents in advance, you can just build it as you hit each one.
Today the topic is open source business models.
Sorry, there's a little bit of
how do they
wait.
Work, how do you make money out of open source, how to be sustainable in business with open source. And today we've got 5 speakers, so a little bit later on I'll take off my Linux Australia hat and put on my Volante hat, but first of all we'll have...
So as you get to each element, you pop up the CMML. That doesn't require a separate callback to the service, that's much simpler, because we're just extracting the CMML annotations as they arrive. If you look at the source for that, we've got a similar create talk entry function, and we do this plugin.register CMML callback, pass it a function, well, we actually pass it the create talk entry function. So every time CMML is encountered by the plugin, it calls out with the text of the CMML annotation to this create talk entry thing. I mean, we're just using it to pop up the table of contents on the screen, but I'm sure you can think of 5 really cool things that you could do with this. My pet favorite at the moment is embedding JavaScript in the movies, and then as you get to the JavaScript, evaluating the JavaScript and having active movie content. But nobody seems to like it. And finally, you know, we can combine those 2 approaches to do things like highlight where we are in the movie. So we pull out all the table contents in advance, and then we just highlight
the current location. How do they work? First of all, we'll have Arjan Hill from MySQL. MySQL is a very successful open source database that no doubt you've all heard about.
So I'm just not displaying that. That information is available. The question is, can you show the point in time that these videos are up to? Yes, you can. I just haven't put that in this particular thing. You see this updates as we move through.
Online, I guess, business, and we'll get to hear about how they're using it
as we move to the next one, right, so you can actually tell where you are in the video. So I mean, and this is all really simple, and it's, you know,
excellent. Talk about what they're up to with a new product that they've open sourced and how they built their open source model around that.
Yep, these are links to see. So if I click here, I go back to that point in time in the video. And one more really, really quick thing is, this is our test page. This is really ugly, but it contains buttons for all the functionality of the plugin, and so it's both an example of how to use the plugin and some testing stuff for us, so we can pause and restart. We can ask for how much has been buffered already. We can get the total length of the movie. As it turns out, we've already buffered it all.
We can
create playlists. And view the playlists, and there's buttons for editing the state of the playlist. Jump forwards and backwards through the different playlists. Right. We can register a CMML callback so that that just displays the CMML as we go through. So this little test page is a way to play with all the functionality of the plugin and figure out what you can and can't do.
How do they work? How do you
make right, that's it for me. I think there's about 10 minutes for questions.
And today we've got 5 speakers, so a little bit later on I'll take off my Linux Australia hat and put on my Volante hat. But first of all, we'll have Arjan Hill from MySQL. MySQL is a very successful open source database that no doubt you've all heard about, so you get to hear about their business model. Then we'll be speaking to Ray Lazaga from
I had it right.
MySQL specializes in business transactions. Online, I guess, business.
Do you want to try this?
Oh, it's pretty connected. Oh, yeah.
Should be connected.
You can use this screen.
How do you? I sort of use that for making an extension to MediaWiki, so enabling all those sort of tools in the wiki environment. So here's So here's the stream view, and this is like all the different metadata chunks for this given stream. You can just like jump to any one of them, and it'll sort of jump through them. Each one, again, this is sort of enabling community transcripts, so people can edit them and make sure they're right. You know, so if you play it, and this button's a little weird to click.
Do that in half week.
So you can play that clip and see if it, you know, matches up with the transcript and edit the transcript, and then it versions and everything and stores it all. And it's all stored in the wiki as versioned wiki text. And again, you can add annotations like categories or so if you tag that section of video as opening prayer, so it puts it into an opening prayer category that generates RSS feeds that you can plug into your Miro player or previously known as Democracy Player. You can. It also generates embed code that you can use on websites like Blogger. So you can just plug that clip that you found into your some other arbitrary web page. And it has a searching system. So if we search for war, you can say, "Oh, I found all the clips of war," but say you want to say only when a particular senator mentioned that that word, you can add in a property like okay, Hillary Clinton. So then we run the search, and we get all the times Hillary Clinton mentioned war, so 12 times, and you can, you know, pull that up and embed that in your blog or whatever you want to do with it. And this builds on semantic MediaWiki, so these are arbitrary semantic properties that are being applied to each metadata segment or section. And then there's also a basic sequencer, sort of similar to what he was showing, where you can do sequencing of clips and it all stays on the server, so you don't have to worry about editing, you know, being really taxing the server too much. And it pulls the, you can see, well, that one's not. Here, for example, it's pulling that text from that segment in the sequence from the CMML data that is a wiki page. But CMML acts as the interchange format. So you log in to edit. It's a little hard to click your button there. So then we go into editor, and it's basically, you know, you see these a lot in Flash, where you can sort of, you know, sequence clips and set in and out points, drag them about, and you know, remove clips or, you know, adjust the in and out points. Tells you where you're going. And these are all just, again, sort of those URLs. If you looked at the actual source, it would just be a list of URLs. This mouse is a little hard to click. You know, you can add by name and pull in from the list of streams and stuff. So, and set the in and out points. It's really hard to click. The what? Oh, the bottom of the button. Okay. Yeah, so there you go. You know, set in and out points. You can preview the clip that you've selected and then add it to the sequence. And it's all open source, so other people have started using it too. This website's not the official, this is still a staging server. It's not officially launched. It'll probably officially launch in a few weeks once we
iron out all the compatibilities for IE eventually, again. it uses a script called MV embed, which selects among available playback systems. So if you're on IE, it'll use Java, because most Windows distributions come with Java pre-installed. And, yeah. I use sort of hacks. What ends up happening is you can do all the same sort of things, but they take a little longer. So we have to reload the Java applet every time you jump to a new segment. It reloads the little clip. But if you're using Ogg Play, then it just jumps right to the place that you specified. Otherwise, it takes another second or two. I mean, it loads pretty fast. Only 100K on a normal computer. It goes pretty fast. Fast internet connection. Here, as you can see, the selection method. So here he has Ogg Play installed and probably Totem. So you can choose the right one. Yep. So that's Metavid. Oh, here's the edit interface. I don't know if I showed that the first time around. So you can set the back. Set the in and out points and make sure they're aligned with the video. So yeah, that's the Metavid project. Yeah. No, actually you can't. This is right, yeah, exactly. So these are all I generate JPEGs for every 5 seconds of video through the entire stream. So there's another wrapper that just queries, right. So it just queries the JPEG, so you can pull up images for arbitrary segments. And that's helpful too, especially for dealing with the fact that Cortado can't frame serve. So.